Welcome to Behind the News. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, cracks within organized labor. Some labor unions resent TUC's decision to call off 18th November national strike against utility tariff increase. What are the implications of the resentment against the TUC? IGP asked to stay on for another 2 years to continue his good works. But exactly what are these good works that got him the nod? And WikiLeaks Part 1, 2 and 3, are there no privacy laws to safeguard people's privacy? Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you details of all these stories on our program tonight. You can also join the discussions via text on 0266-677570, 0266-677570. But first, Naj Abliagu is here with a summary of the day's news.
Government is procuring a ferry to facilitate transportation on the Lower Volta River when rehabilitation works begin on the Adomi Bridge. A Deputy Information and Media Relations Minister, Phyllis Kwachifusu, who made this known at a daily media briefing at the Flagstaff House in Accra, said the maintenance of the Adomi Bridge would link the southeastern part of the country to the Volta and northern parts of the country. The Ministry of Chieftaincy and Traditional Affairs has inaugurated an advisory board that will oversee the effective formulation of policies and the efficient administration of the ministry. The Minister, Dr. Henry Seydou Dana, who inaugurated it, said the vision of the sector is to preserve, sustain and integrate traditional values and practices to accelerate national development. And the Chief Executive Officer of VRA, Keir Koffi, says money has been released for the payment of salaries of the authority staff. Speaking to Radio Ghana, Mr. Koffi said he has met with the aggrieved workers and has advised them to be patient as their issues are addressed.
It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Our text line again is 0266-677570. Now to our first story. The decision by the TUC to call off impending organized labor's national strike against the hike in utility tariffs as a result of the government's resolve to absorb 25% of the electricity tariff continued to cause a stir on the labor front. Some organized labor groups have accused the TUC of taking unilateral decision to call off the strike scheduled for the 18th of this month without consulting them. Is it really the case that the TUC took a unilateral decision? And if it is true, what will the aggrieved labor unions do? Are they going ahead with the earlier decision to go on strike, or will respect the TUC's latest move not to demonstrate? One of the labor unions which is against the latest decision by TUC is the Judicial Service Staff Association of Ghana, JUSAG, and Francis Brakwa is the national chairman of JUSAG, and he explains his group's position further. Good evening, Francis, and you are welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mother Ghana.
Well, Francis, the TUC sees the government's reaction to the agitation of workers against the recent increment in utility tariffs as positive. Is the TUC's decision to suspend the impending strike not a step in the right direction?
Well, I will not say it's a step in the right direction. From day one, USAC as a body has been part of the decision to go on the strike on the 18th. Now, if for anything else, if the government has come out to reduce this, I mean, make some reduction, I think it was just fair and prudent to have gathered all the unions which took that decision. So for the TUC, as it were, to take that hasty and unilateral decision, we think it's not in the right direction at all.
But then, which other groups also can you say are also against the TUC's decision?
Well, that much I cannot tell. But you stuck as a body, right? We were not consulted. In as much as we were not consulted, then you will say it was ST and unilateral decision. The other unions, I cannot say. I cannot say what their minds are. Yes.
But for you, GSAG was not consulted on this matter.
We were not consulted. We were highly surprised, right? We were highly surprised that that decision, that announcement came out when we had not been informed as to the next line of action. At least what we are saying that is that since we partook in that decision, equally, when there's any decision to be taken relative to the government's coming out with that reduction, at least all the groups which could partook in that decision ought to have been gathered, right? Ought to have been organized, as it were, to take a decision on it, whether to suspend the strike action or to, as it were, continue. But this did not happen. And this, we feel, was very unfortunate.
So, in effect, you share with those who have raised concerns that organized labor should at least have put in place measures to monitor the commitment of the government's pledge before deciding to suspend the strike.
Precisely. Yes, precisely. That's why we are saying that the decision was hasty, right?
Well, we also know some of the labor unions, they have given the indication that they will still embark on the national strike irrespective of the TUC's decision. What is JUSAC's position on the issue?
Well, in as much as we are not comfortable with the stand taken by TUC, I think it will not just be, I mean, fair to us to say that we will go ahead, right? We are yet, as a JUSAC, we are yet to meet on that, to take a decision. So for now, I cannot say anything. I cannot say anything of the sort.
For now, you cannot say anything on that decision,
yes,
to suspend that.
The JUSAC as a group, we are yet to meet on that. Mm-hmm. We are yet to meet on that. So, like I said, in as much as we do not agree with TUC, I don't think we can. I can comfortably say that we are going to go ahead with the strike action. Not until we met, right? So that's our position. That is my position.
Well, Francis, I'll ask you to hold the line for me. But how is the TUC taking the accusation by some of the labor unions? And Dr. Yaoba is the Deputy Secretary General of the TUC, who is on the line to respond to the issues raised. Good evening, Dr. And you are welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Dr., TUC have been accused of not consulting the other unions and organized labor, the umbrella body, before taking the decision to call off the strike next Monday, 18th of November. Are you surprised at this?
Sorry, what is the question?
I'm saying that the TUC have been accused of not consulting the other unions under the organized labor umbrella before taking the decision to call off the strike next Monday, 18th November.
It is not correct that we did not consult. The person who is speaking has never attended our meeting. The guy who attends our meeting on behalf of USAC is called Atu Kansa. And he should go and ask him. Probably he didn't get the feedback from Atu Kansa. We met on Wednesday. Organized labor had a meeting on Wednesday. And at that meeting, the Secretary General explained that the business association have made a proposal to government, and they have put forward the 60%, which later became 59%. When the Secretary General explained, all those in the room, including his representative, agreed, including ICU representatives. They all agree. The Ghana Medical Association did not appear at that meeting. So we expected that everybody will go back to their union to explain to them. For me, it's very strange that he's saying what he's saying. Just like, I'm very surprised because he has been part of this process all along. So probably what is missing is that the feedback mechanism there is not working. But I'm saying this to you that we consulted. We had a meeting on Wednesday last week, and the Secretary General explained that the Ghana Chamber of Mines, the Ghana Employers Association, the Association of Ghana Industries have put up a proposal, and government has shown that proposal. The government has gone to consult. So they have also asked us to consult our members. And at that meeting, we had a mandate to go and accept that 60%, which later we managed to get it down to 59%. So it is not correct for anybody to say that we did not consult on the 60%. Probably they didn't get their feedback.
So if I understood you clearly, there was a meeting.
There was a meeting on Wednesday last week.
And there were consultations, and JUSAC members were there.
Definitely. Definitely. And I know the person who came. Mm. Then he said, you should go and ask him. You see, some people don't have information, but they just want to go on air. The thing is that if your feedback is not working, don't come and blame you. So I'm coming. We consulted, and we got the mandate to go and accept the 60%, which became 59%. Now, I guess what people are talking about now is not about whether we consulted or not. So probably the questions are wrong. I think what people are talking about is that after they gave us the mandate to go and accept the 60%, or the, which is now 59%, we communicated this to the stakeholders, and I mean government, Ghana Employers Association, and the Business Association. So government came up with the community that they have accepted the reduction and they are going to implement it and subsidize by 400 million. That came on Sunday. What people are pissed about, my understanding, after I've spoken to ICU leadership and I've spoken to the Magistrate Council of Labour, I haven't got through to Ghana Medical Association. And now, surprisingly, I'm hearing that is also making those comments. What didn't happen, which we admit, is that after we went and after the government issued a community, the Secretary General issued a statement saying that we welcome the community. And remember that when we gave that ultimatum, the Sunday ultimatum, which now later we declare the strike on 18. We did it conditionally. We said that if government does not do anything, we'll go on strike. And before the strike, we went back on demonstrations across the country. It therefore goes without saying that when government has done something, the strike cannot come up. Demonstrations will be called up. And that is what we took for granted. And I guess after I spoke to the leaders, that's what they are complaining about. It's not because we did not consult them. I want my comrade at the side, who is speaking to you, to get it clear that we consulted every step in this action. And this member who was present at that meeting for the Kwanzaa.
All right.
If he did not get the feedback, to go and get the feedback so that he can talk properly. Because you see, these things can destroy the front, and it's not good for anybody. This achievement is not only for labor, it's for the entire Ghanaian population, including government. And we shouldn't trivialize it. It's an important victory for everybody in the country. And we should build on it rather than destroy the front. We comments are coming left, right, center. It might have been a mistake on the part of TUC not going back to get almost all of them to sign that statement. That's admit. But it is not correct for anybody to say that we did not consult on this.
All right. Doc, let me take a quick response from Francis. Francis, you heard Doc on the line there that Jusak, you were also part of the decision that was taken. You were consulted.
Very much. I'm so surprised, right? I am highly surprised that Doc is saying this. Now, Mr. Atukwansa represented us when that decision to go on strike was taken, right? If you could recall, the decision by the government to, as it were, reduce the tariff, when the government announced this reduction, the next day, this decision to call off the strike came on. So you ask him, at what time in point, did the TUC organize this particular meeting at which this decision was taken? Right? The next day after the government's announcement was the day the TUC came out. So for him to say that we delegated somebody that Atukwansa to be there and at that meeting this decision to call off the strike was taken, it's not the truth. It's not the truth at all. Atukwansa was there when the decision was taken to go on strike. But even on that very day that decision was taken to suspend the strike action, we were at a meeting. Atukwansa was in attendance. Right, so at what point in time did Atukwansa attend the meeting? Right, so Doc is confusing issues.
So, Francis, what should have been the ideal way for organized labor to respond to government's pledge?
What I'm saying is that at least after the announcement of the government, the teams ought to have invited all the group who took that to a meeting again. And this did not come on. Asking the following day that the government announced this, the reduction was the day the TUC came out. So at what point in time did this decision come up? At what point in time did this decision come up? So Doc, you are confusing issues. You are totally confusing issues. It isn't true that you were represented, and it isn't true even if a talk answer did attend that meeting. I think for now, he would have communicated to us. But as I was saying, that very day we were in a meeting, Atukwansa was in attendance. And it was at that meeting that it came to us that the TUC had decided to suspend this strike action. So it is not true. It's far from the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, Francis, let Doc respond to your concerns. Doc?
That is why we expect the leaders of organized labor to attend meetings. He is saying that I am confusing issues. He has never attended our meeting. So he doesn't really understand the issue.
You know, at the very onset, he may ask the general secretary whether I was present or not. I was one of the drafters of that resolution. Right? So he wasn't there. He wasn't there. Doc wasn't there at that meeting. I was one of the drafters of the resolution. So you cannot tell me that I do not attend meetings, right? The general secretary was right there. And you can ask him whether I was present or not, right?
Am I speaking or he is speaking?
Well, just hold on, Doc. So, Francis, what is Jusak going to do now in reaction to TUC's decision?
That's why I was saying that even though we are not comfortable with that decision taken by the TUC, right? But I don't think we can rebel against TUC, right? We cannot do that. Anyway, we are yet to meet on that. But take it from me, we cannot rebel against TUC. We are just expressing our position that we are not comfortable at all with that decision. That is not our decision.
All right, Francis, we want to thank you for your time with us. Francis Brakwa is the national chairman of Jusak. Hello, Doc.
I'm here.
So, yes, go ahead. So, what about the assertion that they cannot vouch for government's commitment to absorb the 25% of the electricity tariff? That's their concern.
What reason do they have to say that? Are they saying they don't trust government? I don't think anybody has any reason to say that if government says this, they can, the government will not do it. We trust that government has accepted that they are going to subsidize the electricity by 400 million. the trust government would do it. And this was done in faith. That is why people who were not there should not make comments. I expected that all the organized labor groups should allow those who attended the meeting. And he did not understand what I was saying. On Wednesday, we met. He got the mandate to go and accept what government was proposing. He went and accepted. What we did not do was, after accepting it, what he's saying is that, and what other people are saying, that we should come back to them and say, okay, government has accepted it, and we are going to call all the staff. That we did do. And we admit that. Probably he didn't hear me well. And it's because he doesn't attend our meeting. You see, I said earlier that what we were going to do was conditional. If government accepted to do something, we were not going to go on the strike. If government did not do anything, we were going to go on strike. This is logic, very simple logic. Therefore, if government has done something, we call off the strike. What the complaint is, and I have spoken to organized labor leaders genuinely, they thought that before we call off the strike, we should have come back to them, say, government has not accepted, we are going to call off the strike. We took it for granted that that logic works. So we call off the strike. They are not happy about it. But I should say that we have already invited all organized labor groups to a meeting on Friday. We are hoping that this is an internal issue we can deal with. And it's unfortunate that everybody is going on air for us to discuss all these issues on air instead of dealing with it at home. We are organized labor. There is so much ahead of us we can do together. I don't expect people to be making comments. That is not going to help our thoughts. And that is exactly what is happening, which is very unfortunate. I hope Friday meeting will be a landmark meeting. You'll be able to use that for to sort out all our issues.
But then, Doc, how would you ensure that the government keep the promise of absorbing the 25% tariffs?
I have no reason to say that government will not. I don't have any reason to say that I do not trust what government has said. These are honorable people who met us and agreed to sort it out. Let me tell you what. The first day of the meeting, it was a very high-level meeting. I don't want to mention names of those who said and those who were around. But this was a very high-level meeting. The first day of the meeting, because government wanted to cure, the Minister of Finance was not at the meeting. At the next meeting, they called the Minister of Finance and Minister of Energy. Before government accepted it, I do not think that government will be irresponsible to say that they are going to subsidize 400 million and they will not. I have full belief in the government that when they promise, they will deliver. They cannot do this. This is too much for government not to do. I have no reason to believe that government will not subsidize. And that is why they have to have faith in us. We are not going to accept something that we think government will not be able to do. We did this in good faith. We did this on behalf of organized labor. And we will make sure that government does what they have promised they are going to do. I have no doubt in my mind that government will make this promise. I have no doubt at all.
Well, Doc, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Dr. Yaba is the Deputy Secretary General of the TUC. And also joining us on the line is a labor and mediation practitioner, Ben Atta. Good evening, Ben, and welcome to the program. Hello, Ben, can you hear me? Well, it appears we've lost Ben on the line. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Well, we understand Ben Atta has joined us on the line. Good evening, Ben, and you're welcome to the program.
Thank you,
Lady, and greetings to all your cherished listeners. Greetings to my people at the Tantimambora as well.
Well, Ben, what do you make of what is happening on the labor front, especially with some of the unions against the decision by the TUC to call off the impending national strike?
Thank you very much once again for your question. The dissenting group at the labor front shows or indicates a number of things. The first thing is that the group of people who represented labor on the negotiation table probably didn't have enough consensus. Hence, the other group trying to break away from the decision. What it also means is that even if they were represented, probably they are not in tune or they are not in agreement with the decision taken. So basically, that's what it connotes. One is coming to the fore that there are other groups who are not too happy with the decision that TUC has taken on their behalf. There is a need within the TUC itself to begin to talk to each other on such matters before it breaks out and gets out of hand. There will also be the need to at least sit down with those who represented them on the negotiating table to get an explanation as to what exactly was considered in arriving at such a decision. At least some little education as to why the 25% was arrived at will do us a lot good.
But then, what are the likely implications of the disagreement between TUC and the other unions under organized labor umbrella?
When it comes to conflict dimension, it is likely to degenerate into disagreement on the broader scale. This is just like a fire that is beginning to smoke and to burn. But what we're going to experience, if it's on money, that we have a lot more people, you know, agreeing to the dissenting people. Then, if it goes beyond a certain threshold, it can also lead to overturning the decision that had been agreed upon by TUC and the utility company. So, these are consequences that are likely. When it comes to negotiating aspect two, what it also means is that people will begin not to trust their representatives on other markets of similar nature. You see, people will begin to question, we have asked you to represent us, and this is our agreement, this is what we are going to go to the negotiating table with. Why did you agree to this? Why didn't you agree to what we had all decided? So it can also erase confidence in leadership of TUC in negotiating on behalf of labor union. Another dimension is that it will begin to affect collective bargaining, you know, powers of the union, whether at any point in time they should allow the Congress. You know, TUC is a Congress. It's a grouping, or it's more or less a federation of labor unions. TUC is not itself, is not just a labor union. It's a collection of labor unions. So we might experience a situation where one labor union will dissociate itself from TUC or will take itself from the umbrella of TUC. TUC, if I recollect very well, is made up of about 18 labor unions. So it goes further than just the tariff. It goes further than just the tariff.
But then some of the labor unions have accused the TUC of taking a unilateral decision. How should organized labor have responded to government's decision?
Let me just give a little bit of a problem when it comes to negotiating with organized bodies. Then I'll go back to answering your question. One thing that we experience in this country when it comes to negotiating with a labor organization is that they most often get to the negotiating table already decided as to what to accept
and what not to accept. So definitely when the representatives get on the table, there is one ingredient which is key in negotiation, which is almost always missing. We call it authority. What it means is that whatever their representative had agreed on before attending that meeting, they cannot negotiate and say that, well, we are softening our stance or we are shifting or compromising. So it's been the system all this while. So probably if they had agreed that let's accept 40%, and in the discretion of the representatives, they have accepted 25%, then the members who probably did not have the opportunity of sitting on the negotiation table will begin to say, look, we sent you there, we gave you this mandate, we told you that this is what you must accept, and this is what you should not accept. Why did you accept what we had not agreed on? So these are basic challenges when it comes to negotiating and in industrial relations in this country. It's a difficulty we need to really surmount. Another way we should tackle this, what I've just mentioned, is that we have to begin to urge the unions to scrutinize their own constitution and the way representatives are mandated to negotiate. So that is that. One, going back to your question, what I'm afraid of is that if we don't send representatives who have been mandated enough to negotiate on behalf of their representatives, what it means is that for any strike action, for any kind of labor unrest, we are unlikely to get a timely decision, because people who are always sent are mandated to accept one thing or the other, and some very rigid. And you know, when utility companies are on one side and then labor is on one side, what actually happens is a gap. And when there is a gap, nobody is compromising. There's no common platform to sit on and to negotiate. And we begin to have labor unrest every now and then. So I will urge labor that when they mandate their representatives, they should as well give them the ability to negotiate.
Right.
And to make concessions and compromises where possible.
Ben, we want to thank you for your time with us. Ben Nasa is a labor and mediation practitioner. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra, and our text line again is 0266677570, 0266677570. Some few months ago, the name Mohamed Ahmed Alhassan would not have rung any bell in the ears of the public and ardent followers of the Ghana Police Service. But the current IGP has done so well that in the estimation of his employers, in this case government, he deserves the nod to continue his good work for another 2 years. The news he dispensed this morning to the surprise of many, some of whom were elated about Ms. Alhassan's job extension, while others welcomed the decision with cautious optimism. We will be getting the thoughts of management think tanks about the issue, but first, let us get some explanations to this development from the head of the Police Public Relations Directorate at the headquarters in Accra, from DSP Seifas Asa. Good evening, DSP, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening, my sister.
So, your boss, the IGP, has 2 years' extension to stay on as the substantive IGP. When will his new two-year mandate exactly start?
Yeah, thank you, and I say good evening to your listeners. He has been given 2 years extension, and I don't know what is you mean by when will it start, but I know that he was scheduled to have retired early part of next year.
You were supposed to retire any part of next year.
Exactly.
And so when does his new appointment takes effect?
Now he has been given 2 years extension. It means that with effect from early part of next year, as I indicated, he will have 2 more years extension.
So how did he receive the news of his job extension, if you can tell us?
Well, I cannot indicate that one presently. But I can say that everything is good. He thinks that he must accept that extension in order for him to be able to put more of his ideas, initiatives and innovations into practice for the Ghana Police Service and for the nation as a whole. So perhaps in the coming days, we shall be able to measure or gauge his true response or reaction to the extension.
Well, so exactly what has he done to merit this contract extension? People talk about the introduction of police visibility and accessibility, the establishment of the marine unit of the service, and others. Is that what got him the job for another 2 years?
Yes, as per the information that we had from the source of the extension, the authority that granted the extension or that gave the extension, we know they enumerated the achievements or the successes that he has chalked over the couple of months that he has been in the saddle. They mentioned the police visibility and accessibility. That is the nickname for that operational strategy, but it is police patrol. And as you know, the visibility and accessibility has become a household name. Police personnel posted to vantage points or areas that are vulnerable or susceptible to criminal activities, thereby preventing crimes occurring in those places, thereby injecting some confidence into the public and ensuring that the fear of crime is reduced. It's a mouthful. It has attracted a popular acclaim from the young and the old, the great and the low. They are all touting the police visibility patrol strategy that has been introduced. That is one. And two, you also mentioned the Marine Police Unit. It is a unit that used to exist in the police service some years got disbanded around 1943-45 thereabout. But then through the instrumentality of the police and the Inspector General of Police and his administration, the unit was reborn this year, April. We can also mention the formed police, which is the internationally approved unit for action units the world over. Previously, we used to have the armored car squadron and small units that were called into action in case there was a need for hard palm or action units to take charge of certain situations. The IGP has brought all these things together and giving them the requisite training and raise them to the level of international best practices so that they will be able to handle situations they are required to handle. This include riot control, hostage rescue, and other fields of speciality. Then we can also mention the Ghana Police Command and Staff College, an institution of higher learning in the police service, which was long overdue because commission after commission, committee after committee had
had recommended that the police service needed one, but over the years nothing had been done, and then he thought that the time was now, or the time is now, and as I speak, last 2 weeks ago, that is Wednesday, 6th November, the school came into being at Winneba, and many more other things that the Inspector General of Police has introduced.
Well, DSP, have you heard comments by section of the public in the media that he's staying on does not give the chance to those waiting in the wings to also test the IGP job?
I wouldn't say I've heard much of that, but people are entitled to their own opinion, and I don't think it would be wrong for anybody to express his own opinion.
So what should we expect from the IGP in the next 2 years?
I wish he would answer this for himself, but I will try to go into his mind and see whether I can come out of something. But I can say that the IGP would want to unfold so many more of his initiatives. Even before that, he would want to strengthen the few ones that he has giving birth to, so that they become very effective in helping the police to fight crime and to create a peaceful environment for us, all of us. And then, as I said earlier, I want to come out with more initiatives that will raise the standard of the police to the level that is akin to world best practices. I think that is what he is going to do. And generally, with the general goal of our mandate of maintenance of law and order in the country.
DSP, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. DSP Sefas Asa is the head of the Police Public Relations Directorate. And Anita Rafi Esino is the managing director of OML Africa, an organization that specializes in human management in Africa. Good evening, Madam Anita, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Well, your organization has done a lot of job about the human resource that Africa and particularly Ghana has. Have you been following the human resource in the police service in Ghana?
Yes, indeed. I follow issues on labor in Ghana, yeah.
Especially in the police service?
Yes, yes.
And what can you say about it?
What in terms of?
Well, we are talking about the current IGP who has been asked to stay on because of his good works. And I'm sure you also agree with the decision because of police visibility all over the capital.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, based on some of the initiatives that the IGP has initiated, we know the police command and staff college is one, and I think the speaker just now also made reference to the visibility initiative that he initiated, which has brought more visibility to the police in terms of on our streets and even in the night patrols, which we all see as a positive thing. So clearly, if there's been an extension on his term, it must be because the panel or the decision maker, let's say, feel that he still has a lot to contribute, and maybe also for continuity of the agenda of transforming the Ghana police.
But what sort of implication does his stay have on the morale of the personnel in the service, positive or negative from the viewpoint of human resource management?
Well, I mean, from it depends on in which perspective you're looking at it. I mean, if we take it from the point of view that, well, the his subordinates, aka all the police personnel, are very happy with him as a leader, then there's not going to be any implication. They're going to be quite happy that he stayed on to continue the mission of police. Of course, if you have people within the police service who are not very keen on the IGP, then of course the implication will be that they're not particularly going to be welcoming the news. It just depends on where you stand in terms of whether you are for it or not, really.
So if you were to consult with him, what new initiatives would you advise him to introduce or tackle to enable him to chalk up more success in the next 2 years that he will still be in office?
Well, for me, I would advocate for succession planning. Why do I say that? If you look at the mission of the Ghana Police, one of the things they say in order for them to perform well in their function is to ensure that there is operational readiness. And they also say that they want to make available trained police personnel for deployment at all times throughout the country. Now, we can see that the IGP has introduced this police command and staff college to obviously develop and train personnel. However, I think we need to do a little bit more than that when it comes to succession planning, especially at the leadership. Right now, we have the IGP extended for 2 years. Are we thinking about who is going to replace him when he comes out in 2 years? Are we thinking even just below him? Are we thinking ahead? Because, when we're talking about security agencies, the leadership in terms of public safety is critical. So for me, I would want to talk about succession planning. What is the plan to ensure that key roles within the police services for Ghana are being success planned? And also in terms of, human resources, yes, we've got this college, yes, we've got other means of training the police personnel. Are we thinking about what happens when those people come out into the field? Are we having a long-term strategy on developing our police personnel?
Right.
The other thing that I'd want to, talk to him about.
We want to thank you for your time with us. Anita Riafe Esino is the Managing Director of OML Africa, an organization that specializes in human management in Africa. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. Let's quickly read some of your text messages that have come in. Fred from Hull says the John Mahama administration is quite doing well, but a strong action taken against corrupt officials will help better the lives of the ordinary citizen. Ejenim Boati, University of Winneba, Mampong Campus, says, good evening to your listeners. My worry is the kind of training and legacy we are inheriting as youth of today. It's about corruption, enmity, lies, insults, politics, and so on. Our future is endangered. And this one says, please, Agatha, tweet time is our privacy, no more private, because some lawyers are in support of the person who leaked the Vicky phone conversation. Many thanks for your text messages. Now to the next story. Call it WikiLeaks, Victoria's Secrets, and all the accolades one can get to describe the recent secret recording of past Deputy Communications Minister Victoria Hammer, and the conclusion may be the same scandal. But the issue has brought to the fore the need for a law to guard against people's privacy, and at least many people support the idea because nobody knows who will be the next Victoria Hammer. Here on Behind the News tonight to help us understand some of the legal implications of the current scandal is lawyer Raymond Banabu. Thanks for your time, Raymond.
Yeah, good evening, madam, and good evening to your listeners.
Good evening. Now, speaking as a legal person, would you say the secret recording of former Deputy Communications Minister may have some legal implications for the recorder and anybody helping to distribute or spread that secret material?
Well, it's quite a dicey issue. I have been looking at it in the light of the provisions of the 1992 Constitution. But then, if you look at the 1992 Constitution, especially under Article 18, Clause 2, where it basically provides that nobody should interfere with the privacy of any person's communication, amongst others, his home communication, correspondence, amongst others. But you see, there's also a clause there. It says subject to public safety. And then we also have issues of the economic well-being of the state. So from my very humble understanding of even that provision, what it could mean is that, yes, so you may interfere with the privacy of somebody's communication, if only it is with matters of public safety and also with the economic well-being of the state. Now, in the light of this constitutional provision, one may look at the WikiLeaks tape and ask a question. Now, this communication that indeed was invaded, its privacy was invaded by the driver, which is obvious. Now, was it for the economic well-being of the state, or was it for public safety, or was it to safeguard other rights and freedoms guaranteed in the 1992 Constitution? One could strike the argument to say that, yes, he was trying to kind of come out. The driver was recording it or brought out the video, the tape, to kind of prevent a situation where we would have people going into corruption, which will affect the economic well-being of the state. That is where you stretch it. But in this particular case, if you look at the constitutional provision, I do not think it meant to cover situations like this. But once again, we also have the Electronic Communications Act. And some of us have argued that if you look at the Electronic Communications Act of 2008, Act 775, specifically the offences section, that is section 75, particularly I think JOH, if you look at it, it talks of the fact that, yes, you are not supposed to interfere or intercept or cause somebody to procure, the correspondences or communications of any person. But if you read the whole of that section as a whole, one thing that comes out is that it basically seems to talk about, tapping of phone lines. Because if you read the entire provision, it talks of the fact that except with a court order, by court order or order, or with the express permission of the user, amongst others, then you may have access to the person's communication. But some legal pundits have also argued that, look, once it talks of the fact that, look, you cannot have unlawful access to anybody's communication, then in the case of the WikiLeaks saga, once Vicky never gave the driver the permission to record that statement, what it meant was that the driver had unlawfully recorded, he had unlawful access to a communication. But I honestly think that is far straight. Because if you look at other jurisdictions, for instance, with the United States of America, they have gone ahead to pass, even since 1986, they've had the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. If you look at the United Kingdom, they have various regulations, the Electronic Communications Privacy Regulations, that kind of govern this kind of situation. So for some of us, I am arguing that, strictly speaking, if we are to support the provisions of the Constitution as engendered in Article 18.2, I would suggest that, look, we may have to amend our law to make it expressly clear that you cannot record or have access to anybody's communication or electronic communication unless the user agrees to it or is by a court order. Then in that case, we would avoid this situation that we've gotten ourselves to. So it is actually, it's a dicey area. Mm. There are various legal opinions on it.
So from what you are saying, does it mean that it's not possible that Victoria can seek some relief from the court?
Clearly speaking, maybe she may have to take civil action, maybe under the 1992 Constitution. She may argue that, look, yes, the driver interfered with the privacy of her communication. Because, communication obviously includes phone calls. But then, like I said, if you read the entire, article, it goes ahead to say that, look, yes, if for reasons of public safety, or for reasons of like the economic well-being of the state. It specifically says economic well-being of the state. And if you look at the what Victoria was saying in this particular tape, she appeared to have been talking about making sure she garnered $1 million before she leaves politics. Now, all things being equal, looking at the salary of a deputy minister, it is obvious that, look, there's no way you can get this thing unless by other means, which may be unlawful. So one could also argue from that perspective that, look, whatever the driver did was for the economic well-being of the state, in which case he will not be caught by Article 18.2.
Well, Samuel Oku of the NPP some months ago threatened to sue any media house that played a secret tape purported to have his voice, but withdrew the case at the last hour. Is it because we don't have any proper laws on proper laws guarding people's privacy and protecting people from being secretly recorded? Briefly,
we actually have the framework of the various laws. But let me confess here, I think that I found a number of loopholes even in the 1992 Constitution, especially Article 18.2 and the Electronic Communications Act. And remember that in the case of Sami Aoku, he came out to complain that, look, he thinks that the tape has been doctored, amongst many others. So even the authenticity of the tape was in doubt. So clearly he could have come under that angle that, look, it is not my voice, or the tape has been doctored. This is not what I said. But in the case of Vicky, we have not heard her expressly come to deny the tape.
All right.
She appears to have confirmed the tape by even going to lodge a complaint with the Mile 7 police station. That is the situation.
All right, Mr. Bagnabu, we want to thank you for your time with us. Raymond Bagnabu is a lawyer. Now to our last story. 12 calendar months have just gone by since former Vice President Alhaji Mahama passed on. To keep his memory alive, a lecture was held this evening in Accra to espouse some good deeds of Alhaji Aliyu Mahama. The NPP running mate in the 2012 presidential election, Dr. Mamadou Bawumia, was the main speaker for the thing. Dr. Bawumia talked about the wage bill to revenue situation and said the economic problems of the country cannot be attributed to the single spine salary structure. He bring you excerpts of the lecture.
With regards to government finances, we recall that at the end of 2008, the deficit was 6.5% of rebased GDP. The outcome was described by the then NDC in opposition as reckless. By the end of 2012, however, the budget deficit had reached 12% of rebased GDP. This is the double the deficit in 2008, which was described as reckless. Interestingly, Mr. Chairman, today the government's objective in the medium term is to bring the deficit back to 6.5% of GDP, which is where it was in 2008. And this is what I call reverse gear, not first gear. Mr. Chairman, the NDC government, in the face of growing labor unrest, as the economic hardships have increased, has tried to blame the economic meltdown being experienced on the implementation of the single spine salary system. The refrain from government is that wages and salaries of government workers account for 70% of government revenue. But is this really true? What are the facts regarding the single spine salary system in our economy? The wage bill amounted to 1.9 billion Ghana cedis at the end of 2008. This amounted to 41.3% of total revenue of government. 41.3%. This is at the end of 2008. By the end of 2012, with a 99% implementation of the single spine salary system, the wage bill increased by 4.6 billion to 6.6 billion. We had an increase from 1.9 billion in 2008 to 6.6 billion by the end of 2012 after 99% implementation of single spine. This means the wage bill went up by 4.6 billion. But let us look at what happened to revenue. Government revenue at the end 2008 stood at 4.8 billion. By the end of 2012, government revenue had increased to 15.5 billion. It had gone up by 10.7 billion. So the increase in revenue was more than twice the increase in the wage bill. At the end of 2012, government revenue as a proportion of total revenue was 42.9%, compared to 41.3% in 2008. Government's own budget for 2013 forecast that the wage bill to revenue would be 35% of GDP. So the current economic difficulties, Mr. Chairman, can therefore not be attributed to the single spine salary system, which had been 99% implemented at the end of 2012. In fact, this government was touting its unprecedented economic achievements, including the implementation of the single spine during the 2012 election campaign only last year. So when did the problem arise? The acute fiscal difficulties, Mr. Chairman, the government is facing is directly related to the massive deficit of 8.7 billion Ghana cedis incurred in 2012. The massive overexpenditure, the indiscipline, has left the government cash-strapped and unable to finance statutory expenditures. Some workers have not been paid for 22 months.
Well, you heard Dr. Mamadou Bawumia, 2012 NPP presidential running mate, delivering a lecture to mark the first anniversary of the death of former Vice President Alhaji Aliyu Mahama. And we will be following up with some analysis with members of government tomorrow. And let's read some of your text messages. Idrisu Abusaga from Garu says, may the good Lord bless Ghana and all of us. Jensud Rashidin Wa says, utility is being reduced by 25%. No more strike anywhere because awareness were created through media houses. Any union that did not hear is not current. Monica Kones in Navongo says, WikiLeaks is a lesson to all of us and a sign that we need matured hands on board to help steer affairs of the nation. Natoma Ngusio says, good evening, madam. We, the ordinary Ghanaians, are happy about the reduction of the electricity tariffs. Kweku Asanko says, God bless our country because our leaders are not telling us the truth, including the national executives. And Napoleon from Tumu Sankofa Bay says, the road from Tumu to Welembele through Wa is very bad, so we are appealing to the government and the Ministry of Roads and Highways to come to our aid. And then Rashid in Wa says, please ask if JUSAG was still back on strike. What is their reason for this strike? Chameleon from Comfort Northern Region says, how organizes the labor unions when they are divided over an issue? Nyami from T Drop says, there is a lot of hardship. The government should save these people. Peter Bombandi from Yeni says, I personally think that organized labor should try to bury the differences and fight with a united front. Organized labor should not allow the politicians to divide them. And Yuja Intesin Joel Kitikachi says, I beg the ECG to provide better service for Ghanaians since there has been an increment of bills. Thank you. We also want to thank you for your text messages. And this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of Behind the News. George Kwaku controlled the sounds, and my producers were Christopher Sidu, Edmund Tete, Bright Agama, Phyllis Kofi and Celestine Avi, Na Jagle Agu read the summaries, and my name is Agatha.